From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. President Bush and Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist hit a most unlikely buzzsaw this week when 14 Senate moderates, including 7 Republicans, dramatically intervened in the final hour with a bipartisan compromise that defused the nuclear option, ended a filibuster, and derailed the hard right vision of a take-no-prisoners strategy for remaking the Supreme Court. After years of lockstep majority support on Capitol Hill, the president suddenly faces pushback from an angry middle. And not only on judges. His Social Security campaign is bogged down, the Terry Schiavo push failed, the John Bolton nomination has had a rough road, and Congress is challenging the president on stem cell research. Republican moderates, with John McCain at their head, are reaching for new power. Tonight on Point, a victory for the moderates and whether the GOP's right wing has seen its high watermark. You can join the conversation. How are you reading this topsy-turvy week in Washington? Who's really won? Who's really lost? And is the juggernaut of the Bush base out of steam or just catching its breath? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll hear tonight from Republican Congressman Christopher Shays, from Dallas Morning News columnist Bill McKenzie, the American Prospects' Robert Kuttner, and David Keene of the American Conservative Union, who calls the deal in the Senate this week a frontal assault on President Bush. But first, joining me now from Washington is Peter Kanellis, Washington Bureau Chief for the Boston Globe. He's been covering this week's news out of the Senate and beyond. Peter Kanellis, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Jack, good to have you.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Peter.
So, Peter Kanellis, what's the big interpretation going on here? Has something fundamentally changed in the chemistry in Washington in recent weeks, come to a head this week? What's going on?
I believe it has fundamentally changed. I think that you'll see a variety of different reactions. The reactions tend to track a little bit by depending on what perspective people are looking at it from. The people who are primarily interested in judicial nominations, I think people on both sides are dissatisfied with this agreement. On the other hand, people who've been covering
both sides,
a range of
meaning
issues,
Peter, if I may ask, both sides in this case, meaning whom? Republican moderates and hard right, or conservatives and liberals? What do you mean when you say both sides?
Oh, conservatives and liberals, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very strong conservative and liberal activist groups that have been raiding these judges and pushing the senators of each party to take very strong ideological stance for or against some of these judges. And I think that people who are very invested in that fight, both liberals and conservatives, are dissatisfied with this agreement. It is truly a victory for the moderates. But I think looking ahead at some of the issues that you mentioned going forward, this marks a significant change in the way the Senate does business. There'll be a lot more dealing. There'll be a lot more negotiating. There'll be a lot more compromise solutions, I think, in the future.
And what does that mean about the so-called base that has been so potent for President Bush so far? I mean, this week we heard right away from James Dobson, head of Focus on the Family, talking about outrage, abandonment. He said the Senate deal was a complete betrayal by a cabal of Republicans. Gary Bauer, former presidential candidate, president of American Values, says it's a rebuff of both the president, Senator Frist, and the socially conservative base of the party by a handful of senators. He says the heart of the Republican Party is as unhappy as I can recall. Whose Republican Party is so unhappy tonight, Peter Kanellis?
Well, the Southern base is what they're really talking about, and the social conservative base. They're very, very unhappy. I wouldn't be surprised if they went out of their way to start running challengers in Republican primaries against some of these senators, particularly Lindsey Graham, who's from South Carolina, which mm-hmm. has a very large social conservative Republican Party.
The base, what does it mean for the base? The base has lost this one. The base is going to try to start winning again in the future, and they're going to be putting a lot of pressure on these moderate senators to come back with them.
But do you see, Peter, in the number of Republicans, the half dozen plus Republicans here who came to this moderate conclusion, a kind of swing vote in the Senate that can actually sort of grab the tiller in Washington? Can they, with that number, given how close the Senate is divided, can they take over the agenda?
I think that, you know, almost by their nature, moderates don't like to lead the agenda, but I think that they can be the key votes on so many issues that they can craft the compromises and come up with the alternatives that will get some of this legislation moving.
Jack Beattie, what do you see here? A pause that refreshes for the Republican right, or really a new powerful role for Senate GOP moderates?
Well, I really think that Karl Rove can go to the religious right and say, look, you guys won on substance and on frenzy. They need frenzy. They need aggrievement for their fundraising. They've got that. And on substance, the three judges they got, Pryor, Owen, and Brown, are strong social conservatives. Pryor has spoken of Roe as an abomination. He's equated homosexual activities, quote, with things like prostitution, adultery, necrophilia. Brown, while she's only had one opinion touching on abortion, that was a restrictive one. And Owen is famously active in Jane Doe cases on parental notification in construing, in essentially looking her, putting her own opinions ahead of the Texas statute, at least that was the charge, whereas the other three who seem to have gone down, William Myers, mining lobbyist, religious right doesn't care about him, William Haynes, he's a Defense Department lawyer, he's no... Brett Kavanaugh, a young staffer at the White House. He's the former Ken Starr, served on Ken Starr's staff, but he's got no connection with the religious right. And Judge Henry Sod of Michigan, who also seems to have gone down, well, he's just he's controversial only on sexual harassment cases, which aren't salient to the religious right. So they've got their judges on, and these other people, it seemed to me, really weren't their people anyway.
So there's the landscape of judges, but there seems suddenly to be even more on the table. We're joined right now from the floor of the House in Washington by Congressman Christopher Shays, Republican from Connecticut, represents the 4th District there. Congressman Shays, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Good morning. Afternoon. Is this Tom?
Yes, this is Tom Ashbrook.
I'm right next door to the floor. I'm not on the floor
okay,
right now.
Fair
I'm
enough.
I'm breaking lots of rules if I was
Right you are. You're famously among kind of a leader in this moderate crew that's been critical some of what's been going on in the Republican Party. How do you interpret what's happened this week, Congressman Shays? How big a deal is it?
Well, I think it's a huge deal. I mean, I think it's important for the American people that we've had a meaningful vote on stem cell research and embryonic stem cell research. We thought it was an achievement just getting a vote, and to have a vote that where we had success and the legislation passed, I think is huge.
And what about President Bush's agenda? Is it now derailed? Are moderates, though they may not be the majority of the GOP, or they may, you tell us, but do you have the tiller? Are you steering at this point?
Well, no, we're just part of a team that wants to have our voice heard a bit more, and I think you're seeing us be a little more outspoken. I don't think, frankly, in the long run, this is going to be a good vote for the president to veto. I don't think history will be kind to a veto.
On the stem cell legislation.
Absolutely. And it did pass the House with 238 votes. I think it passes the Senate. I do think the legislation sent to the president. And he said he'll veto it. And for the life of me, I can't imagine why he's made this, you know, one of the first bills that he intends to veto. He hasn't vetoed a bill yet.
Congressman Shays, look beyond stem cells for a minute, though they're part of the picture here. Look at the picture on judges this week, on what happened with Terri Schiavo and didn't happen. Look at the pushback on John Bolton, the president's Social Security plans not exactly steaming ahead. Has the country seen the high watermark of the Christian right, the hard right that was so integral to President Bush's base here and their social agenda, or not? Is this just a pause?
Well, I mean, it's a good question. I want the president to succeed on some of these issues, but I happen to support John Bolton, but I strongly disagreed with our taking up the vote on Schiavo. I mean, my heart went out to her family, and I didn't look forward to coming down on Sunday and voting and playing almost God in this issue. But it was very clear to me this was not an issue that the federal government should have been involved in. And on two levels, one, Republicans don't want, believe in states' rights, and the state dealt with it. They don't want an activist court, and yet we were asking that the federal government be an activist court. It was just a real contradiction based on, frankly, the religious views of some.
John McCain, and others, but John McCain in particular, has been very critical of the evangelical Christian right. Of course, they fired back this week after the deal in the Senate. James Dobson had a focus on the family, big Christian group out of Colorado, calling it an outrage, talking about abandonment and betrayal. Is John McCain, are you, playing a winning game with this moderate hand inside the Republican Party today?
Well, you know, I don't know if we call it a winning game. I think what happened was I was excited by it. I liked feeling that Democrats and Republicans could compromise. Neither side loved it a lot. The far left and the far right were really unhappy. But what's happened is most of the judges will have an up or down vote, almost all of them. Legislation won't be held up. And for many others, it was comforting to see that men and women could act like adults and get along with each other.
Congressman Christopher Shays on Capitol Hill tonight. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Christopher Shays of Connecticut. Peter Kanellis, there's satisfaction there with this week's events, but not exactly a victory lap that he's hollering through for moderation here.
Yes, I think that, you know, everybody in Washington is sort of waiting to see how these things play out. There's certainly a large number of people who think the moderate coalition is going to break apart on some issues. But I do think that it's unmistakable that this has been a major assertion of power by moderates. And I think the moderate coalition itself sort of expanded. People like John Warner of Virginia, Mike DeWine of Ohio, and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, all of them conservative Republicans, more or less, never really identified themselves as moderates before, and there they were, smiling beside McCain, happily describing themselves as moderates. So you know, there may actually be some growth in the moderate ranks.
We're going to look tonight at exactly what's going on here. Peter Kanellis, Jack Beatty, please stand by. We're talking tonight about the moderates' victory in Washington this week and whether the GOP's hard right has seen its high watermark or is just taking a pause. You can join us. How are you reading this topsy-turvy week in Washington? Who's winning? Who's losing? And has George Bush's untouchable hard right coalition topped out here? Or is this just a temporary setback for the new Republican base? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the moderates' victory in Washington this week and whether the GOP's deep right has seen its high watermark or is just taking a pause. You can join the conversation tonight. What do you think? Has George Bush's untouchable right-wing coalition topped out here? Should Democrats be celebrating, or were they losers even in the moderate moment? And have Washington moderates now seized the steering wheel in the Capitol or not? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight from Washington by Peter Kanellis, Washington Bureau Chief for the Boston Globe. Our own Jack Beatty is with us. And right now we're joined from Dallas, Texas by Bill McKenzie, columnist with the Dallas Morning News. Bill, it's great to have you with us tonight. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
What's your interpretation this week, Bill? How much weight are you giving to the John McCain move here? Do you see the hard right as having lost the momentum, lost the steering wheel in Washington?
I think they've lost some momentum. I don't know if they've lost the steering wheel. I think it's too early to know whether they will regain the momentum they lost. I'm glad to see it. I spent a dozen years in Washington working with moderate Republicans, so I'm glad to see a centrist coalition come together and win. Centrists have not always had a good track record over the last 10 or 12 years of making things happen, and I think this is really going to give them a taste for victory.
And with that victory, what do they do? Do they now force the president to trim his sails on his agenda? Do they do they cut back on the social aspect of the agenda? They push for fiscal responsibility. What have they been stewing with?
I would flip it the other way. I think Bush should really take advantage of this moment. I'm saying this as a moderate who likes Bush and saw him work closely here in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see him grab the tillers, which was the way I think you talked about it earlier,
mm-hmm.
On Social Security and put together a coalition like this. I don't think it's going to be the same group of people necessarily, but you have Lindsey Graham, who's certainly spoken out on Social Security. Get 12 to 15 people together now. And why does he need to do this? Because he really has about 9 months to get something done. He spent the last 6 months on Social Security, and he's not getting any place. And I think he needs to get his own group together and to say, in so many words, everything is on the table.
But that means, Bill, as you describe it, I'm reading between the lines that he'd have to step back from some of his Social Security agenda, for example, step back maybe from private accounts, which have been, something that can't go off the table.
It could go both ways. I mean, Lindsey Graham has come up with a way to pay for private accounts where you could put 2 to 3% of your earnings or your Social Security contributions in a personal account. He's come up with a way to do it. And I understand Bush has said, I'm not going to raise the payroll tax rate. But if I'm not mistaken, he has not completely come out and said, I will not raise the amount of money that gets taxed, if you will. So whatever it is, come up with something and let them know, you know, I'm willing to go back on some things I've said. I want to get this done. We've got 9 months. Let's do it.
So use this as opening up some running room. Peter Kanellis, that's an interesting idea. George W. Bush's reputation out of Texas was someone who worked with moderates who often cut to the center. It's been quite different in the White House. Can you see him going back to that Texas model here, given all the commitments and alliances he's made in the last 4 years?
Well, I certainly agree with Bill that it would be a very smart move for Bush to sort of seize on the coming together of the moderate coalition and try to get some of the conservative Democrats like Joe Lieberman and Ben Nelson to be in a compromising mood, maybe, give some nod to private accounts, maybe at a smaller level than the conservatives really want at this point. But, get something moving on Social Security, declare victory, and move on. That seems like a very smart move, and it's something that because it's an economic issue where Bush, I think, has a little more running room. I think that on social issues, though, Bush is quite hemmed in. They did rally the base in the last campaign. Mm. Social conservatives came out for him in a big, big way. I don't think that he can, tack to the middle on social issues.
Just not
– I would
Bill McKenzie, yes.
I would agree with that. I would also point to Bush's victory on education back in 2001, which was a kind of a classic Bush approach to government. He built that from the center out.
Get Ted Kennedy in the White House with him there.
We had Ted Kennedy to Judd Gregg. He had John Boehner to George Miller, and he had these people wrangling and wrestling, and that's kind of what I'm envisioning or hoping for on Social Security. I mean, I agree, the social issues, I don't think he's going to do that, but on arguably some issues that affect even more people, here's a chance to do something.
But a lot of water over the dam since then, a lot of bile. Jack Beattie, I hear you there.
Yeah, but on Social Security, he's not going to get the Democrats with anything on privatization. He is, according to the latest polls, he's rated at 29% on his handling on Social Security. USA Today yesterday said the Democrats have their best numbers as to which party you want to control Congress since they lost the Congress. So the Democrats feel they're doing something right in basically saying, we'll talk to you about tax increases on Social Security, we'll talk to you about benefit cuts, perhaps the age, we're not going to, privatization has to come off the table. I don't see that they would give up on that at all.
Let's think about the Democrats for a moment with Robert Kuttner, co-founder and co-editor of the American Prospect magazine. His column appears regularly in the Boston Globe. Robert Kuttner, thanks for being with us tonight.
Happy to be with you.
You have said very loud and clear today you don't see a victory for, I don't know about moderates, but for the Democrats here. You're saying, hey, this is being called celebrated, but in fact, Bush is getting most of what he wants in the court front.
Yeah, there is such wishful thinking on the part of a lot of the press around the idea that if only moderates from both parties could come together, the Republic would be saved. I think if you step back and look at what this deal actually did, all this deal did was it postponed Frist's ability to go nuclear and kill the filibuster. And in exchange, the Democrats essentially agreed to save the filibuster for extraordinary circumstances, and three really wretchedly right-wing appointees are going to get through the Senate. And my question is, if the seven Republican moderates are such great moderates, which ones of them are going to show some profiles and courage and vote against these three people? And the answer is hardly any. These three are going to sail through. So on everything that counted, Frist won. And if Frist took a bullet here, it was a flesh wound at worst. And I think all of my liberal friends who were calling this a great victory are whistling past the graveyard. The right won.
Robert Kuttner, do you see anything new in John McCain stepping up, taking the limelight away from Bill Frist, who had aligned himself so closely with the social conservatives, with that gang of senators, at least on the surface defying the White House and the Republican Senate leadership? Do you see anything changed in that?
I think they defied the White House all the way to the bank. I mean, these most right-wing judges are going to get confirmed. I think what I see is 2008 politics, where McCain and Frist are obviously going to be adversaries and rivals. But if you look at John McCain's record, McCain, even though he has a kind of cantankerous independent streak, he's a conservative on almost all issues, and he doesn't have much use for George W. Bush, and some of the base is angry at him. But this guy is no moderate if you look at his voting record. So there's a little bit of pulling and hauling in anticipation of 2008. But I think all this talk about a moderate center coming together is wishful thinking.
Peter Kanellis, Robert Kuttner says all show and no beef in this GOP moderate uprising. What do you say?
I don't really agree. I think that I think that we've seen a big, strong movement from the White House, sort of spurred by Dick Cheney and led by Bill Frist, to try to have the Senate run more like the House, where the majority sticks together, the minority has no say, the majority pushes everything through. A lot of people here felt like it was a foregone conclusion that they were going to get their 50 or 51 votes for the nuclear option. And once you get rid of the filibuster, then all the conservative judges go through. That's what the Democrats were staring at, you know. All 100% conservative judges go through, and that would have emboldened the right wing on so many other issues and pushed so many things through. So this was sort of a moment of truth for the Senate, and the moderates in the Republican Party did stand up and say, we're not going to be pushed into this. We know Bill Frist wants it. We know the White House wants it. We're not going to be pushed into it. And I think that's significant on all those issues going forward that you mentioned earlier, Tom.
Robert Kuttner.
Peter's absolutely right that the norms of the Senate are different from the House. They're not going to march quite in lockstep the way the House is. But if you look at the substance, to me this is salami tactics, that the right gets much of what it wants now, it comes back for the rest later. And again, the proof of the pudding is which of these moderates are going to vote against these right-wing nominees, how many right-wing nominees are going to be blocked, which of the moderates is going to vote against John Bolton and other really reactionary nominees, and the answer is precious few. So it really is more sizzle than steak, and yes, there is a difference. You can't have the Senate operate in lockstep quite to the degree that you can have the House, but Bush and Frist are getting almost all of what they want.
So no champagne corks popping in the Kuttner corner tonight, but an acknowledgement that something has happened here. Bob Kuttner, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Robert Kuttner with the American Prospect Magazine. A lot of callers want to join us. Let's turn to them. Kathleen's calling from Southern Pines, North Carolina. Hi, Kathleen. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. You can hear me?
Yes. You're a little bit fuzzy, but what are you thinking, Kathleen?
I am thinking that in the last couple of weeks, that the right wing has just gone too far. They want to replace science with the Bible in the science classroom. They want to replace a republic with a theocracy. And I think it scared a lot of people. And to see this absolutely immovable, intolerant view of God and the world, and that their position is the only one.
Kathleen, are you Republican or a Democrat?
I am actually neither one. I'm a moderate.
And do you think that that you've seen a high watermark now, or just a setback for the social conservatives in the GOP?
I really believe that there are so many problems in this country right now that are not being addressed. And I think that more and more people are waking up to with the extreme position of the extreme right.
So you see a turning corner there. Kathleen's, our line is a little rough, but we thank you for your call. Bill McKenzie, how about it? It comes back to this fundamental question of whether there's a fundamental turn here or just kind of a, you know, a fracas in the party.
Well, I don't think we know, but I think if people like your caller there in North Carolina, you know, gets on the phone and calls her legislators and writes the letters to the editor, you know, those things get heard, and it's going to require the moderates not only in the
and the capital to do something. It's going to require a lot of moderates outside of there to stand up. You know, David Brooks wrote this column this week in the New York Times mm-hmm. saying that moderates basically don't know how to crack knuckles. Well, they did crack knuckles on this one, and I think that is good. But they, you know, they need to know there are people out there like your caller who will support them at the ballot box.
Bill McKenzie, Peter, Jack, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Washington, David Keene. He's chairman of the American Conservative Union, nation's oldest conservative lobbying organization. He said in a statement on the ACU's website that the compromise in the Senate this week was a, quote, frontal assault on the president and an unacceptable precedent for future presidents. David Keene, thanks for being with us tonight.
It's a pleasure.
So what do you make of the moderate uprising? Is this a matter of consequence? Is it a change in the fundamental chemistry of Washington in the second Bush term? Is it a moment's fancy?
I don't think it's really any of those things. Some of the senators who joined with the Democrats did so because they don't relish any kind of combat. But the subtext of all this, of course, was the presidential contest coming up in 2008. John McCain saw an opportunity to embarrass a person who he considers one of his competitors, that would be Bill Frist,
mm-hmm.
And was instrumental in this precisely because of his desire to be president and to undermine or prevent one of his competitors from getting the upper hand on him. He succeeded in doing that, at least for the short term. In actuality, this deal that was made doesn't mean very much unless either the Democrats live up to their side of it, which most people do not think they'll do.
That is, restraining from the filibuster in all but extreme circumstances.
Right, well, like extraordinary circumstances, mm-hmm. Used the term.
Mm-hmm.
And they parsed their words very carefully. My comments were based on what was said at the press conference by the senators there and what was said in the agreement. The senators there suggested that the message to the White House should be that, in essence, the president should vet his judicial nominees with them, the senators who reached this agreement, if he is wise. And if the president were to agree to do that in any kind of a formal way, that would be giving up one of the prerogatives of the president. One of the senators suggested that this establishes that they are co-equal in making these appointments. The Constitution does not view the Senate as being co-equal with the president in making judicial appointments. No president can really accept that position.
David Keene, we step back here, if you'd be kind
sure.
enough, just for a moment, from the judicial issue, the judiciary issue alone. You've got the president not making real progress on Social Security. You've got the pushback we've all seen on John Bolton. The Terry Schiavo push that was made by Republicans in Washington didn't succeed. Now you've got Congress defying the president on stem cell research. Does all this mean that there's a kind of high watermark beyond the judges issue that may have been touched here? As a conservative administration, is the president going to have to trim his sails a little bit or not?
Well, I'm hoping that in some areas that the Congress, and I think that this is going to happen, will stand up to the administration on spending issues. And there's some evidence that Congress is going to do that. I think conservatives in Congress have to put pressure on this administration as they would on any other administration to rein things in a bit, because this administration has spent money on programs as wildly as any other past administration. The Congress and both parties has participated and gloried in that spending. So those kinds of fights are going to go on throughout the remainder of this administration. They should have gone on, but they don't go on as much in the first term, because the president can say, look, I'm going to do it your way after the re-election.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after the re-election, the president can't say that anymore. And so then anybody within his coalition who disagrees is going to try and press for their advantage. That's a natural historic kind of thing, and I don't see any problems with it. There's, you know, one of the things that's going on, if you go to the Social Security issue, for example, I think that in many ways, whether the president gets what he wants during his term is not as relevant as the fact that he's changed the discussion and the Social Security problem is ultimately going to be solved. But the interesting thing about it, from the perspective of the Republican coalition and from the perspective of the way we look at Washington, is that the entire debate has taken place within the Republican coalition. The American people, in poll after poll, agree that there's a problem. The Democrats say there isn't a problem, and the Republicans have got more solutions than anybody can deal with. But at least they're dealing with the problem, or trying to. The big debates on policy questions at any time in our history have taken place within the governing party. And what all this is really evidence of is that the Republican Party has become, or is becoming, the governing party.
Well, we hear you standing with your crew there, and we appreciate it. David Keene, chairman of the American Conservative Union, thanks for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
We are talking tonight about the moderates' victory in Washington this week and exactly what it means. Bill McKenzie is with us from the Dallas Morning News. Peter Canellis from the Boston Globe. Jack Beatty's here. You can join us as well. Will President Bush have to trim the sails of his agenda now? What do you think? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the moderates' victory in Washington this week and whether the GOP's hard right has seen its high water mark or is just taking a pause here. You can join us tonight. What do you think? Will President Bush have to trim the sails of his conservative agenda after this week, after recent events? Can John McCain and company take on the Christian right and have a future? Is Bill Frist all done? What about James Dobson? And is this a moderate moment? Or a real sea change, a lasting sea change. We're joined tonight by Peter Canellis of the Boston Globe, Bill McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News. Jack Beatty's with us as well. And right now, Scott's calling from Brookline, Massachusetts. Hi, Scott, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi. Well, I consider myself to be a moderate Republican.
Yep.
And I just would like to remind people that there are more moderates than there are extremists in either the Democratic or Republican parties. And I think one of the tragedies is that the extremists are the ones who vote in the primaries. So you have a situation where you have someone like John McCain, who's arguably the most popular politician in America, who can't win a primary election for the Republican Party. So you end up with extremists on either side running against each other in presidential elections. And my hope is that more incidents like this will embolden the moderates out there to go to their primaries and take back their party.
But it's been a pretty successful strategy for President Bush, allying with the Christian right, let's say, and they've still got a big agenda that they are very determined to put through, and make no bones about that. Do you think that the winds are changing here, Scott?
I hope so.
There's a hope. Who knows? Scott, thanks for calling. Peter Canellis, you say that this Senate, the moderates here, you describe them as a suddenly bold and surprisingly potent coalition of angry moderates. Look ahead with us for a moment. Where do you, if there's that potency there, where do you see it being applied in the months ahead and in the remaining years of this administration?
Well, I mean, on the Republican side, I mean, you're starting to see it with stem cells. The House vote was not quite enough to override a presidential veto, but as soon as Bush vetoes this this bill, there'll be a lot of pressure on other House members, other Republicans, to sort of join with the majority and override this thing, maybe by changing some of the language in the bill. So that's one test that'll be coming up. For the Democrats, I think Social Security is one. Whether the moderate Democrats start sort of talking like Republicans, agreeing that there is a problem down the line, you know, coming to the table to try to hash out an agreement, that's one area where the moderates can make a lot of hay. The big test ultimately is going to be a Supreme Court nomination, and you'll see the cloud of the moderates right away. If it's the Chief Justice who steps down, the moderates want Sandra O'Connor to be the Chief Justice. The conservatives want Antonin Scalia. If Bush comes out and nominates O'Connor as Chief Justice, that's a very significant statement.
Bill McKenzie, and what about the sort of picture of the 50-year Republican reign that Karl Rove and others have talked about? Our sense was that was premised on a durable, long-standing alliance with the Christian right. Is there really a picture here where the Republican Party can now step away from that wing? Isn't that wing at the heart of the Republican Party now?
Well, let's put it this way. It's a
It's a big leg of the Republican Party. I think there's still a question as to who owns the heart of the Republican Party. I think there are a lot of different forces competing for the heart of the Republican Party. But obviously, you can't ignore the right wing, and I don't think it's going away. I don't think one victory like this for the moderates means that the right wing is going away. I think I just see it differently. In a way, I think Bush is going to abide them on their social conservative agenda. What I would hope he would do is then, in so many words, let them have that agenda and then turn around and try to make use of some people on the Hill and people who once were on the Hill, like John Breaux, Democratic senator from Louisiana, or Charlie Stenholm, who is a Democratic congressman from here in Texas, both of whom understand Social Security needs to get fixed and have taken positions that their party didn't always like. Somehow try to involve these guys in talking to Democrats about coming up with some sort of solution. Here's another way. You know, Bush has been preaching or have been talking about a high school initiative. Margaret Spellings over the Education Department has been interested in this. Well, it's kind of going nowhere.
A high school initiative to do what, Bill?
Well, you know, it kind of tracks a little bit of what Bill Gates has talked about in terms of redesigning American high schools, making them better.
To bump up performance there, yes.
I beg your pardon?
To bump up performance in the high school.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And to curb dropouts, get more kids to be able to get ready for college. So, you know, find a coalition that can go work on something like that, which would be a parallel track to anything that the social conservatives may have on their particular issues.
Let's get another call. Jeff's calling from Wakefield, Massachusetts. Jeff, you're on the air.
Thank you. It seems a little like sort of an insular Washington discussion to me in certain ways. And one thing I'm curious about is, to what extent is this what's being viewed as a moderate victory in Washington reflect moderate public opinion or moderate public feeling? I'm reminded of back in the 90s when there was a government shutdown. It seemed like there was a real reaction against overreaching in Washington, and the idea that people don't elect their public representatives to go to Washington to draw lines in the sand and have standoffs. They want them to make tough decisions and compromise and make progress.
So look beyond that tableau of the moderate senators on Monday night. Look at what the public heat may be behind them. Jack Beatty, you've been looking at those poll numbers and quoted a couple earlier, but I think Jeff is on to your song here.
The president is substantially a lame duck. That's a fact, but he's also suffering the lot of the lame duck in an accelerated way. His disapproval, overall disapproval rate, 43%, 35% approval on the economy, 29% on Social Security, 31% on energy policy, 37% on Iraq, and 65% say we're losing ground on the budget deficit. That's the worst since 1989, and that set off, that surge of public opinion, the Perot Rebellion against the deficit and the efforts by Presidents Bush and Clinton to deal with the deficit. Only 19% in this ARG poll say that their economic situation is improving. The president is in substantial trouble with public opinion. He's not now being set against John Kerry. He's being set against himself and against what people see as the priorities of the country. Only 35% in the NBC poll say that Bush has the same priorities for the country as they do. That's just not giving him much leverage to work with in trying to get people to do things he wants on Capitol Hill.
Bill McKenzie, how do you see that from your Texas perspective, a Southern perspective there? President Bush has his vulnerability, I guess. We saw this week in a way, and as Jack says, he's by definition a lame duck. But going forward, does in the fight to succeed President Bush, is there now a kind of a new window opened up here to the center? Will the whoever wants to succeed Bush have to listen to the center more, in addition to that right-wing group that's been so powerful, so potent?
Right. Well, I still don't I still don't think we know. I hope that somebody can run from the center in the Republican presidential contest in 2008, and I would hope that is the case. But I don't know, you know, whether it means that the nominee must absolutely listen to the centrists, because I do think this coalition that broke through in the filibuster was somewhat tactical. Mm-hmm. You know, you have people came together for a lot of their very own self-interest, and they all moved this thing forward. So I don't know if it is necessarily a significant breakthrough, but it's nonetheless, as I said earlier, a victory.
Something to really watch. Paul's calling from Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Paul, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Well, I think that what has happened with the moderate stand that we're just talking about with mm-hmm. the 14 senators plus Voinovich's stand on the Bolton issue
yes.
are things that will appeal to the middle America vote, including the part of the Bush vote and part of the Kerry vote of the last election, as the middle America is not hard-nosed. And this was covered up in the first Bush election. He was an unknown as far as his hard-nosed agenda is concerned. He was a compassionate conservative. Then he was a war president.
Mm-hmm.
And that was appealing to middle America, motherhood and apple pie, and not the extreme right or left that I'm talking about now. And so I think that we might even see more of this moderate move, or whatever you want to call it, that will be an appeal. And if McCain can get through the 08 primaries, which is tough, then he'll have a major appeal to middle America.
Paul, we've got it, and watch out for that traffic there in Cleveland. Thanks for your call. Peter Canellis, what about that calculation? On the one hand, we saw what happened in Washington. All of our callers say, look out across the country. Look to the voters. Do you have the sense that the base has really changed here in Republican calculations, though? How do you figure that John McCain is making his calculations? Can he really be in the face of James Dobson and the Christian right and have a hope of succeeding, whatever his centrist appeal may be?
Well, there are a lot of variables in play. In 08, there will be contentious primary battles in both the Democrats and Republican side, which hurts McCain a lot because it means that moderates who tend to be independents will be divided up between the Democrat and Republican side. And in other words, if there were an incumbent Democrat right. or a Democratic frontrunner who'd really cleared the field, mm-hmm. then the independents are all voting on the Republican side because that's the interesting race, mm-hmm. and they would have much more moderate clout. But one thing I think, and I think that McCain will have problems because McCain is now truly hated by social conservatives. But there are a number of moderates lining up to run in 2008. So it's clearly not considered an impossible race if you have people like Mitt Romney, governor of Massachusetts, George Pataki, governor of New York, Chuck Hagel, very independent-minded and moderate on many issues, Nebraska senator, and McCain, all sort of gearing up to run for president.
And Bill McKenzie, a final thought. We just got half a minute here. We've heard so much fury from the right in the last few days, absolutely raging about what happened on Monday. Where does the weight of that fury fall? Where does the punch land?
I don't know, but I think the right better watch it and not just talk to themselves. Otherwise, the country is going to move past them. I was talking to a former Republican senator who served under Bush in the Texas legislature yesterday, and he was, lauding what happened in Washington and said, this is what you need to make legislatures work. And I think that the right ought to bear some of that in mind. This, again, was a Republican saying this. I think there are a lot of mainstream people out there who want to see things done, and the filibuster breaking now allows Social Security to go forward.
Well, otherwise, a very interesting week there in Washington. We will be watching. Bill McKenzie at the Dallas Morning News, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
You bet. Thank you.
Peter Canellis with the Boston Globe, wonderful to have you.
Thank you.
And Jack Beattie, great to have you with us tonight. Thanks for joining us, Jack.
Thank you.
In a moment, a kindergarten teacher laments the materialism she sees in her young students. This is On Point. Los Angeles kindergarten teacher Wendy Kinnar was struck recently when one of her students questioned the size of her wedding ring. The 5-year-old was disappointed that the ring didn't have a big diamond in it. That made Wendy wonder about the values that her young students were gleaning from popular culture. In tonight's radio diary, Wendy Kinnar worries about the materialism she sees in her very young pupils.
"Where's your rock?" she asked, she being one of my kindergarten students. "I've got 10 fingers and wear 8 rings. Understandably, my 5-year-old friend was confused about which of my many rings was the wedding ring. I pointed to the rings of honor on my left hand, and then she asked about my missing rock. I told her not everyone has a big diamond. She insisted that I was supposed to have a rock. I told her that you don't have to wear a big diamond to be married, that my simple silver band and small diamond ring still meant I was married. She looked skeptical. On another occasion, a 4th grade student was looking at my wedding picture, taken 6 years ago. She said my dress was nice, but it wasn't a real wedding dress. I told her that not everyone wants to wear a really big, puffy dress, that my slim white gown and homemade veil were what I wanted to wear. And yes, it was a real wedding dress. She dismissed me with a slight shake of her head. Already it has begun. Somehow my students have absorbed tainted ideas of what marriage is about. Girls are learning that they need the big diamond and the big gown to be married. What are we teaching our young girls, or for that matter, our young ladies and not so young ladies? The marriage is what you live with day after day. The wedding, that's just one event. My parents were married 30 years ago in a rented gown and rented tuxedo in Las Vegas City Hall. No reception, but still married. When it was my turn to get married, my fiancé and I budgeted every penny. Our families were small, and we didn't want to spend a lot of money on a big show. We were married in a local chapel and had a simple reception in my parents' living room. And we've been happily married for 6 years now. When it's all said and done, whether there are 20 people or 200 people in attendance, the bride and groom go home as Mr. and Mrs. And for us, that was the most important part. I worry about my female students who feel they need all the extras. I worry about my male students who feel they must provide for these extras, going into debt to buy an engagement ring that will be larger than someone else's. A ring can be stolen. A marriage cannot. It's not easy to teach my kindergarten students phonics skills and math concepts. It's even harder to teach them values. I see them for only a few hours each day, and often the words they hear me speak are a contradiction of what they're hearing and seeing when they're not in my classroom. My job as a teacher is never limited to the curriculum found in a textbook. Each year I realize more and more that the way I conduct myself and the choices I make are lessons for my students. My 5-year-olds watch what I eat at snack time, a piece of fruit. They ask me what I like to do at home. I tell them I read. In everything I say and do, I am a role model, as well as in what I do not do. And so I hope that through the examples of the rock that I do not wear and the elaborate dress that I did not choose, I am providing my students with a lesson more heartfelt and meaningful than any found in a textbook.
Wendy Kinnear teaches at Rosewood Avenue Elementary School in Los Angeles. Her essay first appeared in the Christian Science Monitor. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.